Technology.ie, it's Thursday, January 23rd, 2014.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Hello and welcome to technology.ie. My name's Conor Muinichon and I'm in Michaela Nealon's office at Black Knight HQ with the boss. Hi, Michaela.
Hiya, Con.
How are you?
Not bad.
Just back from Las Vegas.
Yes, just about. I've spent about a week over in Vegas, primarily for NamesCon, which I think at this stage now, after the number of people who registered and actually turned up, was the biggest domain industry conference we've seen for quite some time.
And it was the first one of this conference, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the first one in that series. And what made it quite interesting and made it more attractive and probably more popular was the fact that instead of charging, you know, hundreds and hundreds or possibly even thousands of dollars for a ticket, choosing a venue where you're spending $300 or $400 a night and all that kind of thing, they opted for the Tropicana, which is, you know, right off the strip in Vegas. But you can get us, I think you're paying, what, maybe $80 a night or something for the hotel, and a conference pass, if you'd got it early enough, was maybe $100 to $200. So not an expensive thing. I mean, I actually looked at my own expenses, and even though I was in Vegas for a couple of days on either side of the event and, you know, did other things as well, between the hotel room, meals and everything for over a week, it worked out cheaper than what I'd have spent in Dublin.
Right. I got the impression, listening to you last week and tweeting on social media, it's kind of like the crossroads of the world when it comes to business conferences and tech conferences. I saw you met Jason Rowe while you were there. He was there for something else entirely, wasn't he?
I caught up with himself and the wife on, I think, the tail end of their honeymoon, because they got married about 9 months ago. And okay, like a lot of people, they didn't go on a honeymoon straight away. So they've been traveling around the States for the last few weeks. And they just happened to be in Vegas at the same time as I was. So they came over while the .xyz opening party was on in the Tropicana.
Okay.
Now, I couldn't get them into the party, but they did actually get to meet and see some of the biggest domain investors in the world whilst they were there.
Right. Did they get any autographs? No. I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek.
Well.
It's a kind of, I'm always interested when you talk about domainers and things like this, Michele, because it's like a hidden world that your average person, even your average tech person, doesn't know a whole lot about. But there is a community, there's a culture, there's an industry there.
There is, and it's fascinating, because I mean, some of these guys, they're spending, you know, huge amounts of money on domain names, they're making huge amounts of money on domain names. But a lot of them, you know, they're building out big businesses, they're building websites, and in some cases, you know, the domain names are just one part of their business. There's other parts to it as well. It could be affiliate marketing, it could be in some cases something completely unrelated.
Yeah, and it's funny, we were just talking a little while ago about domains and the importance of domain names, and you think it's something quite significant that's happened this week, in that an Irish company has paid $500,000 or euros, I'm not
euros,
sure,
euros,
for a particular domain name.
Yeah, this now to me, I mean, the more I look at the story, the more excited about it I am. And it's, I mean, you know, I happen to know the guys in Digital Crew in passing. I mean, wouldn't be bosom buddies.
Just to fill in the story for people, we'll put a link to it as well.
Of course.
A company called Digital Crew. What have they done? What have they bought?
Well, what they've done is they've bought the domain teamwork.com for $675,000, which is about 500,000 euro. And the reason why I think this is really interesting is because, for them, they're pushing this, they're putting a big PR push on this. And, you know, they're quoted in Silicon Republic talking about how they were actually reinvested all the company's profits into the domain investment, and that they would view the domain investment as showing a return. I think the saying was that we are 100% confident the investment will pay for itself in no time, as we expect our product range and improve marketing to expand our product range, and improve marketing under the new brand. And, you know, this is great, because one of the things that we've been saying for a very, very long time is that not all domain names are equal. You get yourself a good, brandable, easy to remember, easy to spell, easy to type domain, it's going to give you an advantage. sure, you're going to have to pay a little bit more, and in some cases a lot more for that. But if you look at how much advertising costs, be that online or offline, put it in perspective. You know, and you want to get brand recognition. You want to get it to a point where somebody, they don't have to go floundering around the place looking for you. They'll just go to that place. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, you can spend a lot of money on domain names and you can do a lot with it, or you can spend a lot of money on domain names and do nothing with it. I saw somebody else mentioned there earlier this afternoon that a very large brand had spent probably quite a large amount of money on pharmacy.com, but it doesn't even resolve to a website. I mean, that's just a waste of money.
Yeah.
But, for a company that wants to make a serious play and be recognised on a world stage, you want to get a good domain. Now, what we're saying to people as well is, look at .co, look at .me, maybe look at .biz. You might find that you can get a really nice domain in one of those extensions. And of course, with the new TLDs coming, there's going to be more choice and everything else. And I think all these things, combine. But it's all about building a brand, your online brand around the domain. The domain can be the cornerstone. Like, I remember a few years back when we were talking amongst some of the registrars about domain names, and I think one of the guys asked, tongue-in-cheek, of one of the senior guys in GoDaddy, do you think GoDaddy.com is only worth, like, $8? I mean, obviously it's not. I mean, you take any big company that relies on its online presence. I mean, do you honestly think that Facebook only pays like $8 a year to have Facebook.com? I mean, I don't know how much they're paying the registrar, but they're going to be spending a lot more to make sure that they have that domain name, that they have other domain names like FB.com, FB.me. You look at Twitter with T.co. You look at, so many companies that have invested time and money in getting short, memorable, catchy, easy to remember, easy to get to, accessible domain names. Doesn't matter what industry they're in. And it's just, I think it's something that, the fact that an Irish company is doing this, it's high profile, is good, because a lot of people seem to think that a domain name is just a kind of random throwaway thing, and they don't seem to understand the value. As somebody who holds a portfolio of domains across multiple extensions, I mean, I find it amusing and sometimes quite insulting when people come along and go, oh, you're not using that domain. Would you give me that domain? It's like, well, sure. But I didn't happen to notice that the suitcase with the cash. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that all domains are going to be worth millions of euro, dollars, or whatever currency you're comfortable with. But at the same time, you've got to realise that if a domain name, like anything like that, I mean, it's like online real estate. You can't say that if you're going to set up a high street shop on Grafton Street, that you're going to pay the same rate in rent and everything else as somebody who's setting it up in some business park out in Park West or in some small little town in West Clare. Mm. There's going to be. There's differences. There's different costs. There's different advantages. So you have to bear that in mind. And if that means that a small company spends a couple of thousand euro on getting a good brandable strong domain, that's going to cost them a lot less in the long run than all the marketing and everything else they have to do around a much weaker domain.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Let's move on, Michele. And again, talking about Las Vegas, the announcement was made, I think, yesterday. It's not even an announcement. It's in relation to this Collision Conference, the latest.
Oh, yes.
And that's going to be in Las Vegas as well. Now, I don't know. I saw a brand new Twitter account. And the latest thing Twitter has started doing is it started telling me who my friends are following.
Yes.
So all of a sudden it said Collision Conf HQ, your buddy Michele. Kayla Nealon and several other people have just followed this brand new account. They'd only two tweets in it. What? It's gone?
They could have just changed it. No, it's Collision Conf now.
Collision Conf. All right, just call it Collision Conf.
No, that's not them.
Isn't it? No.
Oh, well, never mind. Anyway.
Okay. Anyway, somewhere out there is a website and a Twitter account for the Collision Conference, which is supposed to be held in Las Vegas. Here it is. We found the website. What's the website called? Collision.
It's Collision.
Conf.com.
Collisionconf.com.
Okay. All right. And this is the latest venture by Paddy Cosgrave and the team from Web Summit. You did a bit of inquiring about it yesterday. You were on to Paddy, in fact.
I was. I mean, I was curious because, you know, the thing is, he's delivered in the past.
Yeah.
He's managed to run several very big, very successful conferences, both in Ireland and in other parts of the world. I mean, there's been several in other parts of Europe, as far as I know. I think it was the Pub Summit was another thing that was run. There's the Founders event, which I still haven't been invited to. And there's this thing now in Vegas. And, you know, Vegas is fascinating because the city of Vegas, one of the things that they pitch is that, you know, you hold your conference here, you are going to get more attendees. And you might think that's a facetious statement. It's not. If you're in North America and somebody says, would you like to come to a conference in Washington, D.C., or would you like to come to a conference in Vegas? They go, ooh, Vegas, ooh, shiny. Because you go to Vegas, there's so much you can do. Doesn't matter what way you want to do it, whether it's eating out, going to a show, sitting in a conference room all day, whatever. You know, shopping. There's so much to do there. So what do we know at the moment? Well, I suppose the short answer is very, very little. It's being organized by the guys behind Web Summit. It's being held in Vegas. It's probably around the middle of May. They're talking about having 500 tech leaders there. Now, I don't know what the hell that means in real terms. But if they say they're going to do it, I would say, if anything, they'll probably over-deliver, as they have done in the past. I mean, if you look at the schedule for Web Summit in Dublin, in the 10 days or so leading up to the event, they added loads of stuff to it. And it was big before then. It got bigger as it progressed. So at the moment, you can go onto the website. You can sign up to receive more information. I'm looking at it, I'm kind of going, hey, this could be something which I might actually go to.
Right.
Is it crazy for me to go halfway across the globe to go to a conference? Not if the right kind of people are there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing is, this is, you know, you go to your hang, if you're going to the right, if you're in the right kind of group, you can have those kind of valuable contacts, have those valuable conversations, which can lead to a hell of a lot more. So, you know, it's worth something to look at, and definitely something to keep a close eye on.
Very good. And of course, the people who have perhaps a lot of maybe West Coast people as well, who would have heard about Web Summit and maybe plan to attend or not plan to attend or wished they'd attended, this really is going to be on their doorstep. So if it's a similar kind of an event,
oh yeah,
totally. It's certainly going to be attractive from their point of view.
Totally. I mean, the thing is this: getting to Vegas from most places along the West Coast, you're talking, you know, 45 minutes per plane.
Yeah.
That's nothing. I've got friends in the States who consider a 2-hour commute to be, you know, normal.
Let's move on, Michaela. Let's look at some of the other things that we were talking about. So I put up a post there last week under the heading "Down with this sort of thing," and I was maybe a little bit mean to Fine Gael TD Patrick O'Donovan, but I really actually only reported the reaction that was online and very much in Twitter to his proposal. That well, that was the thing. It wasn't really clear from looking at his press release what the proposal was about, except that he had identified that there was something out there called, I'm not sure what he called it. Here's the headline. O'Donovan calls, this is reading straight from the Fine Gael website, O'Donovan calls for crackdown on internet browsers and payment systems which facilitate illegal activity. We know what we think he might be talking about there, but he certainly didn't express it very well in the press release. He went on to talk about open source browsers, which had been banned apparently by authorities in the United States. And then what happened they had recently taken action to address the issue. However, it appears the solution was temporary, as replacement browsers quickly appeared to ensure the continuance of the illegal trade. Is he talking about Silk Road? Is that what he perhaps maybe talking about or wanted to talk about?
I think, there's two things to this. One, what he said.
Yeah.
And two, what he may have thought he said.
Right. So let's talk about what he said, first of all.
Okay, what he said was it was, as you say, as you rightly pointed out, incoherent rubbish.
Right.
And that's being generous.
So he seems to have Googled it and come up with a few terms that he thought perhaps...
I have no idea. I'm not even sure if Google would have given him that bad information.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of... Like, I don't know where the hell he got it from.
Well, open source seems to have been the key word zeroed in, which is really misguided.
I don't know why. I mean, there's a load of buzzwords in there. And unfortunately, most of the buzzwords in there are totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
Payment systems. I mean, you know, it's like saying criminals use the roads, therefore we must ban roads.
Yeah, and this really is the problem, is that he seems to have had, as you said, a limited understanding of what the issues are. But then zeroed in on unfortunately, a lot of people and a lot of politicians tend to do. They say, oh, let's ban the technology that's facilitating whatever it is.
The thing is this. I mean, he was... Okay, he put this statement out. Now, why on earth Fine Gael didn't vet it before it went up on their main site is... I don't know how political parties work these things. I'm not affiliated with any political party. I give them all an equally hard time. And, you know, there are some politicians out there who I know are very, very hardworking. I know from my own personal dealings with several of them, they will call me at like 11:30 at night ask me, you know, can they run something by me to understand, you know, what the hell is going on?
Which is the kind of consultation and research that you expect any politician
It's not even a research. Yeah. There's civil servants, for God's sake. It's not as if you know, Fine Gael are the ruling party at the moment.
Yeah.
So that means they have their own resources, plus they have the civil service at their beck and call. And you can go on and on and do the old bail bucket about how hard things are and all that kind of thing. But it wouldn't have taken much for somebody to go, right, this is a problem. This is the text we put together. Does this text make sense? And the answer would have been, no, it doesn't. It's absolute rubbish.
And in fairness, Michele, it must be a point, and you have said this before on this podcast, right, which is that, yes, there is a role for politicians to get involved in internet governance. Yes, there is a role for legislation. Yes, there is a role for regulation. Yes, there is a part to play. And let's face it, as you've pointed out before, governments around the world are participating in certain fora and certain organisations where there is a role and a voice and a requirement, indeed, for governments to take part. And in fact, as you've pointed out before, historically, one of the problems has been, and one of the deficiencies has been, that Ireland doesn't participate where it should.
It doesn't participate. It just simply does not show up.
At an official level, like at a
even on an even unofficial level.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to a big internet governance related event, or even on a mailing list, and you'll find it's going to be dominated by pretty much every other nationality, and there are countries of all shapes and sizes and people of all shapes and sizes, colours, creeds and what have you. The Irish are not there. And yet, you know, you will see, you know, people talking about, oh, let's make Ireland into a hub of technology. And, you know, at the same time, like, we're talking now about an Irish politician who doesn't know his browser from his And then at the same time, you've got Irish companies and organisations doing other things which are, you know, at the cutting edge. You know, what the hell? Like, Relex Payments put out an announcement earlier today about how much money they processed in payments in Q4 of 2013. And they were up something like 50% or more on the previous year. That's probably a wrong number, but, you know, they're seeing massive growth. As an Irish company, started off just over 10 years ago, you know, Colm Lyne said, hey, I have a vision for online payments, and he went for it. And they're now dealing with some of the largest companies in Europe, and it's all been run out of Ireland. Isn't that fantastic? Isn't that great? And it is. And yet, you've got the Irish politicians who just don't have, a lot of them just don't turn up. So it's like, Arisher, aren't we great, but we're not going to do anything about it. No, it's frustrating.
I would just add to that, which is to say that if Deputy O'Donovan or any elected representative does want to get involved in regulating the internet, does want to get involved in participating in internet policy, there is a place for that. There is you know, there are people they can ask.
There are multiple venues. Yeah. There are multiple venues. And I wouldn't say, and I'd be careful about saying regulate. I'd say if they want to participate in internet governance, which is very different to regulating internet governance, there are plenty of places where they can participate. At the moment, I'm involved in various internet policy initiatives. And in some cases, you know, you're seeing representatives from various European governments turning up in either an official or an unofficial capacity. You know, it's not that hard. It doesn't take much. It just means, you know, just turn up.
Speaking of regulation, or maybe, again, that's not the right word, and I haven't blogged this week, Michele, because I haven't known what to make of it. Net neutrality and a decision that was made last week in a district court.
And I was in the States when that happened, so yes, it came up in conversation.
Okay, what are people saying?
Well, it's something that, you know, people aren't 100% sure what the hell to make of it. Mm. And it's, you know, this entire thing about net neutrality, just to, for those who aren't familiar, it's the idea that, as a kind of a general concept, if you, as a user of any ISP, want to access any content on the internet, you should have the same kind of level of access as anybody else. I mean, that's being very, very, very simplistic, but that's the general concept.
That's one side of the concept, and it's one ideological position, and, you know, it makes sense. And it's yours as well.
Of course.
Some other people say, well, not all packets are equal in terms of their value, perhaps, ultimately to the end user. And some carriers, some internet service providers in the United States in particular, are saying, well...
The problem really, Colin, comes back to who is actually using all the bandwidth. Mm. Now, the reality is that the bulk of downstream bandwidth in the US is Netflix and YouTube. Mm-hmm. So they're both video streaming services and they use a huge amount of bandwidth. Mm. So the conversation around that has been, you know, do you want to end up in a situation, you know, would, if you are an ISP and you were aware of the fact that, you know, the people are accessing YouTube and they're not paying you specifically for that, but they're using a lot of your network resources. Maybe you should either A, charge your user more, or B, charge the content provider or something. That's the kind of the thing. But the problem around that is then that you could end up in a situation where you have silos of content that people can't access. That, let's say, if I'm using an ISP that doesn't have particularly deep pockets, then I won't be able to access YouTube, just as a silly example. My ability or inability to access YouTube isn't going to impact my health or my well-being. But let's extrapolate from that. Let's just say that further down the line, you end up in a situation where, say, if you think of the internet as being the world's the greatest font of information and knowledge the world has ever known, then you're putting a barrier in the way. And the thing about the internet, since its kind of wider adoption by the public, it's been this leveler. You know, that anybody who has a connection can access the information that anybody else can access.
And I suppose the problem is that because generally people don't have, in most cases, often don't find that they have a choice of a broadband provider, that perhaps there's a situation where broadband providers may feel they have a monopoly over the situation then in that case, and that they can sort of say, well, you know, we're not going to prioritize YouTube or Netflix or whatever it might be, we're going to prioritize other traffic over that unless we get money from the provider, I suppose, or from the service provider and from the content provider in this case. You know, I suppose In what they're doing really is they're looking at what these content providers are making in terms of subscriptions and advertising, and they're saying, we'd like a share of that, really.
That's what a bottle of it boils down to. Because that's the thing. I mean, okay, you take, say, for example, say Time Warner, just as one example. You know, the Time Warner Corporation has interests in lots of different things. So, I don't know, they're constantly selling and acquiring and everything else. But let's say you have Time Warner Cable. I'm not even too sure if they're still owned by the same company at this stage. But let's say that they are. So, if Time Warner wanted to give prioritized access to the Time Warner streams of content. I mean, sure, that makes kind of sense because it's on their own bloody network. But then they're faced with a problem at that they've got, they're selling services, they're selling cable, they're selling all these other things, but people are piggybacking on their service to access Netflix. But, you know, this is the problem. This is, if, from our perspective, this conversation, okay, the big thing that the FCC, that was in the States, but it's not as if it hasn't, this kind of thing hasn't cropped up in Europe and will crop up again. Do we really want to go back to a situation where all ISPs have bandwidth and download caps, where if you want to have a decent, stable, fast connection, you have to pay hundreds of euro per month?
We see, and we're already seeing these kind of deals in the wireless world, Michaela, and we know this is the case in the States, and I've seen examples here in Ireland as well, where typically you will have a cap on your mobile, your 3G or your 4G, your mobile broadband, you'll have a cap on that, but they will say to you, the provider, whoever it may be, and I can't think of a specific example, but Vodafone or E-Mobile or whoever will say to you, oh, you don't have a cap when it comes to, for example, Netflix or Spotify or something like that. They're doing deals. The carriers are doing deals with the content providers already. Now, that's not net neutrality. If Vodafone has done a deal with, with Spotify or whoever.
Vodafone, I think, have done something with Spotify. Yeah.
They're saying not all packets are equal. They're saying this packet will count towards your cap, this won't.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain degree of that. I think it's going to be quite an interesting debate to follow, and it's going to get more complicated over time.
And so here's what I'm wondering, Michele, right, is that there are people in the States who are saying that this ought to be decided by the market. This ought to be decided by free market and not by regulation.
Well, that's where it starts getting quite interesting, because if you look at broadband in different markets, now we love to whinge and whine over here, but I've talked to some of my American colleagues, and I was talking to a few of them there last week when I was in Vegas, and some of them, people whose net worth is pretty damn high, who live in the greater insert city name here area, and we're not talking about some tiny little village in the shticks of the States or whatever, but big cities, and they're dealing with 2 to 3 meg download speeds. Whereas we're now getting to the point where the connection you have, Con, it's okay, but it's rubbish compared to the one I have, but that's okay. It kind of levels out. In the US, that's the way the market is over there. It's not like that at all. It's an absolute bloody mess. So you can end up in a situation where it'll actually get worse. The market won't sort itself out because they're not really competing anyway.
It's going to be very interesting to see. The decision last week apparently was a technicality in the sense that the FCC had decided to regulate this and imposed regulations in relation to net neutrality and was challenged in court. And now the court has pointed out that because they hadn't designated the broadband providers as common carriers, that technically they're not in a position to regulate them. Apparently it's going to take... Congress has to do this designation, which could be very interesting indeed. We're into political lobbying.
Will happen then, because the problem with the US at the moment is if you actually look at the number of pieces of legislation that are actually decided per year, you'll get a number. But the question you have to ask is how many were actually presented to them? And that number is significantly higher. The way it is at the moment in the States, with the way that the entire setup is, with they more often than not, nothing gets decided. So it could be years.
This next topic I want to talk about, Michele, there's a graph here on my screen here in front of me. I'm not going to dwell too much on this because we've done this in a podcast already this week. So on Sunday night, I was very lucky to get Mark Tighe, who's a journalist with Sunday Times, who had written this story for the Times, and also two bloggers, Una Sinnott and Paul Duggan, who had talked about it. You can read about it on technology.ie. You can listen to the podcast, I think, which was very comprehensively discussed and treated by the panelists that we had on. But I just want to get your take on it, Michaela. I'm looking here at a graph of the fans of the Consumer Association of Ireland's Facebook page. Now, the Consumer Association is the consumer advocate in Ireland, or one consumer advocate here in Ireland. It's an independent, non-governmental organisation, but it does receive government funding. One of the things it received government funding for was to improve its social media engagement and to improve its engagement in media in general. There's the graph. I took this as a screenshot from a site called Fanpage Karma. I don't know, have you used Fanpage Karma or something similar?
I've used several tools, and I've actually been playing around with Fanpage Karma since you posted that link.
So this is an analysis of Twitter followers. Sorry, I beg your pardon. No, Facebook. And so I've made a mistake in the caption there. It's an analysis of Facebook followers of the Consumer Associations of Ireland Facebook page by country. Now, this is an organisation which advocates on behalf of consumers in Ireland, and in Ireland only. Mm. So Ireland, looking at this graph, apparently makes up only about 8% of their followers. The biggest number of followers there, Michele, from what country?
Somewhere in South America.
No, well, in this case, on this graph, Turkey.
Turkey.
Yeah. So the majority of Twitter followers of the Consumer Association of Ireland are in Brazil. The majority of Facebook followers of the Consumer Association are in Turkey. And indeed, 8%, or sorry, indeed, in relation to the Twitter followers, I'm not sure what the story is with the Facebook followers, but the Twitter followers went from 300 to about 3,600 and something in a matter of hours on last Monday. So we've talked about this before, Michele, fake followers.
Yeah, I mean, fake followers is one of those things. You can't stop it completely. You know, Twitter, Facebook, and various other social media networks do a lot about trying to combat, you know, the zombie bot type things. And if you're looking at pure metrics, now at the moment I'm looking at the Consumers Association of Ireland, which oddly enough follows me. I don't know why. They now have 2,432. Followers.
But the fact is, Michele, that we know the majority of those... Now, since this broke, right,
yeah.
They've done a lot to try and unfollow some of the fake followers. And
well, you can't
to,
unfollow, you no, but unfollow your own
I'm
followers.
Not sure how they got rid of them, actually. But they've been trying to replace them with... apparently, there was a rush of the CAI actually following legitimate individuals and organisations here in Ireland, which earned them a certain amount of follow back. So it's possible that their ratio of fake to real followers has changed since over the last few days.
But it's been discussed to death over the years, and it's, you know, we see this happening on Facebook, we see it happening on Twitter, where, you know, a brand will try to sell advertising or say that, you know, getting involved with them is good because of the metrics and this and the metrics and that. And when you actually look at it, you realise, hold on a second, this doesn't add up. I mean, we've seen in the past, I remember there's been discussion about a certain social media company based in Dublin where they had, I think they had over 10,000 fans on Facebook, and a quick analysis using a third-party tool revealed that the bulk of them were, you know, in India or Pakistan or something like that.
But here's the thing, okay, that may look good if your job is to be a social media consultant and to say, look, I have all these followers. But if you're something like the Consumer Association of Ireland, whose job is to advocate and engage.
They need to engage.
Yeah. If you're Black Knight, for example, Michele, and your job is to engage with people who you hope will do business and buy domains and hosting from you, again, fake followers are useless. They're no engagement. You will never sell to a fake follower.
No, of course we won't. I mean, the Black Knight Twitter account, just as an example, it's not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not particularly big. We have, it follows 5,300 odd accounts, and it is followed by 11,100 odd. Now, how many of the followers are real? I don't know, and I don't care.
No.
Because they're there.
No. But you engage on a daily basis, Michele, with people who are talking to you and who are very briefly, actually, I want to talk about something like that, something similar that we posted, which is kind of related, which is the Social Bakers, which is an organisation that we have, they do a lot of research on social media. They came out with their latest quarterly report on social brands and a metric which they're calling socially devoted. devoted. So a business that they're describing as socially devoted does three things. One, it maintains a dialogue with their followers. Two, it responds to at least 65% of questions answered, of questions received. And three, it communicates that in a timely fashion. You actually sent this way, this my way, Michele. And one of the interesting things that comes out of it is that airlines are the most socially devoted by sector, at least, on the internet. Not surprising.
No, I mean, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating little snapshot of what's going on and what people are doing. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, uses social media a lot and uses airlines a lot, it's very interesting. Like, I've had some interesting experiences with airlines over the last few months. But, you know, Aer Lingus were responding to people fairly quickly over the Christmas break. Other airlines, you could tell, come December 23rd or thereabouts, that's it. Shovels down, we're gone. I stay in a lot of Hilton hotels, and you know, you find that if you tweet something about the Hilton, they'll reach out to you and go, hey, can we help you? Yeah. And you know, I think this is a kind of thing that, you know, we've been advocating as well, you know, engaging with people, talking to people, addressing their concerns. Now, you can't address all of them. And I think one of the airlines, if you look at the Fuller report, I think one of the airlines that is doing particularly well is KLM. Mm. Now, KLM has this really, really cool yet potentially creepy option that you can set up on your account with KLM. If you have a KLM or Air France account, you can log in because it's the same company at this stage. So when you go to check in on it for a flight, and you can opt into the social thing, and what you can do is see if other passengers on the same flight in the same cabin have opted in. So you can kind of like set up your own, and this is a micro social network just for that flight, just in that cabin. It's bizarre. I tried it out when I was going to Cuba last year, and unfortunately nobody else wanted to play ball.
Yeah.
And this is on the way to Cuba, because of course I had no real internet connection there, so I couldn't do it on the way back. Yeah. But I thought, you know, it's an interesting experiment, and I love that kind of thing where companies are playing around with this stuff. I mean, they're not going off and spending millions on it or anything like that. They're going, hey, you know, this technology's there, let's play around with it, see what happens. But as I say, it's an interesting snapshot. Because, you know, the difference is companies that are actually engaging with followers, they can reap the rewards.
Yeah.
I mean, we said this, we put out a press release at the beginning of the year, you know,
engage
in social, it leads to sales.
It's a no-brainer, and it's funny, I was interviewing Chris Byrne of Sensor Pro during the week. He's another podcast we've done. But we had a good laugh, really, about how, and again, talking about airlines, how Michael O'Leary and Ryanair seem to have sort of woken up to this. As you've already pointed out in a post already this year, Michele, social engagement equals sales. Michael O'Leary and Ryanair are really engaged in that at the moment. And you know what? I don't know if you've had a look at any of those Ask Me Anything Twitter sessions that they've done on the Ryanair account. Michael O'Leary has participated in, as far as I know, at least two of them. I think the guy's enjoying himself.
I think they're having a bit of fun with it. I mean, I think they really are.
But, I mean, if you consider that it's only a couple of years since they were talking about lunatic bloggers.
Well, yeah, but I think, you know, the thing is, you can learn, you can progress. I mean, we all learn. There's certain things that I do today that I wouldn't have done a year ago.
Yeah.
And in a year's time, I probably will be doing things that I don't do now. And you know, this, it's, you know, it's an evolution. You evolve, you learn. And it's very, very easy to constantly beat up on Ryanair. But at the same time, you know, what purpose does that serve?
No, nothing. But what I'm saying is they're actually generating a lot of buzz at the moment. They have traditionally done it from sort of stunts, like suggesting they might charge for use of the toilets on their flights and things like that.
Of course.
But you know what? I think that people are responding really well to their engagement with social media. It's a positive story all around. Michele, we're about to get kicked out of the office. It's closing time here at Black Knight for the evening. But before we do, I want to just very briefly. Oh, that's gorgeous. That's a photograph.
Well, we're just looking at the Ryanair Twitter account while we're talking. And it's like, most of the stuff is tweets, is text tweets, and they're using hashtags and all that. But what's nice is they're doing things like they're sharing photos people have taken of Ryanair planes.
And from Ryanair planes. That's a gorgeous picture from the Irish Mirror, I think it is, of a Ryanair plane against the background of a...
Yeah, but we don't talk about the Mirror.
No,
we don't talk about the Mirror.
Okay.
No.
Against
evil.
Michele, we're about to get kicked out, but what I want to say to you is that there is, people may have heard the sound of sandpaper and a little bit of work going on in the background as we were speaking. There's a lot of painting, a lot of sprucing up, a lot of work going on here in Black Knight HQ at the moment, because we're preparing for the launch of our new data centre, which is going to be on the week after next. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is something now. I mean, it's taken a long time. It's taken longer than we'd have liked it to have taken. So we'll be announcing the official opening of our new data centre at the beginning of next month. And there'll be more on that between now and then. But, you know, it's at the moment we're in the, what's the home stretch or whatever that analogy is. Terrible sports analogies. And, you know, we're doing a bit around the office and around the building just to, you know, clean it up a little bit. Give it literally a new lick of paint.
Looking great. Michele, thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks, Colin.